Mike Rowe here with a radical idea. If you want to see more companies make more things in this country, buy more things from more companies who make things in this country. I refer in this case to the incredible t-shirts, sweatshirts, blue jeans, and more made by my friends at American Giant. Everything American Giant makes is made in the United States. And right now, you can take 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com/Mike. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a growing network of people who believe the center of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ, and that learning to take love seriously is vital for how we practice discipleship, mission, and leadership. The Gravity Leadership Podcast explores, in practical ways, how to root our lives and our leadership in this love that holds all of us and everything together.
Hey friends, welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast.
Welcome.
Hey, it's Ben, and I'm here with Matt. We are still not actually here together. We're here online. We're looking at pictures of each other, and we are distancing in the middle of June, as we should.
Responsible.
As we're supposed to. We're trying to be responsible around here, and yeah, so we're in the middle of this parenting series that we have started. We decided to do this parenting series before the world started burning down. But I like the fact we don't need to like upend everything that we're doing. You know, we still have to parent our kids in the middle of a global pandemic, and we still have to parent our kids in the middle of all the protests and the unrest and all of the stuff that's happening right now across the world. It's really quite a remarkable time.
Yeah.
This is a remarkable time to be alive in many ways,
So, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Remarkable. Does remarkable have a pejorative or a positive sense to it?
I in my mind, remarkable is a pretty neutral word. It's just like these are momentous times. These are I wasn't trying to make a value judgment on what's happening.
Yeah.
I was trying to say I don't think I've seen anything like this ever in my lifetime. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, either the pandemic or these worldwide protests, like I haven't seen either of these things in my lifetime.
Nope.
And they're happening at the same time. So
yep.
It's a remarkable, incredible time to be alive.
I think remarkable just means something that you'd want to remark on or about.
Right. I feel like we'll be remarking on this for the rest of our lives. I feel like our grandchildren will be like, did you live through that? Yes, we did. Yes,
I'd like to make a remark. Please go for it.
Right. Yeah. I can imagine, you know, if we're grandparents, you know, sitting in our chair and the grandkids are over and they're like, you know, they're like, oh man, grandpa's going to make a remark again, isn't he, about coronavirus, whatever that is.
Anyway. Yeah.
So friends, we want to get, this is an interview today with Lacey Finn Borgo, who talks quite a bit about having spiritual conversations with children.
Yes.
And she is basically advocating for a very, very much like a spiritual direction approach with children to hold space for their questions, to never deny them their questions, never shame them for asking questions, but to hold space for them, for these questions that kids have, and letting that be a way of them learning that that God is with them in the midst of their wonderings and the things that they notice about their life and about the world.
Yes.
And it was really great. She's amazing at this and gave some great examples about it, about how to do it. And I was just reflecting, Matt, that we, I think as parents, this scares us to let our kids have questions about faith, to entertain some things, especially if it feels like, man, what just came out of their mouths is like theologically wrong or, you know, that kind of thing. And I, you know, another thing that's happened as we've, you know, seen these videos of police brutality and just the world seems to be waking up to something that obviously the Black community has known for a long time, that systemic racism, you know, is a real thing. And these are really deep entrenched problems that we need to deal with, et cetera, et cetera. But I've heard people talk about people with kids struggle to know how to talk to their kids about this. There's an impulse to shield our children from being traumatized by, you know, watching, you know, violence that, you know, would feel violating to them.
Yep.
And that's an appropriate concern. You know, anytime you see this is why, you know, you don't let your kids watch R-rated movies. Like anytime you see violence, it is inherently violating. But by the same token, wanting them to understand the world that they live in, wanting them to understand the realities of racism, wanting them to understand some of those things. So I wonder if Lacey's approach here could have some, I don't know, could have some impact for us, could have some, something to say about, obviously we recorded this before all this happened, but
yeah,
I wonder if her approach could be helpful as we think about kind of talking with our kids about this. Do you have any, I mean, my kids are older and so I haven't wrestled much with this. They're old enough to sort of see some of these things and really take it in. But like, do you have any thoughts? How have you been talking with your kids about this stuff?
Well, my 7-year-old, 8-year-old, sorry. She doesn't want to talk about anything bad or scary or sad.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little trickier.
That's like 100% of what's in the news right now.
Right.
Yep. Bad, it's scary, sad.
Yep. Very tricky to talk to her about this. But I will say that my son, who's 11, he's asking lots of questions. He went to a demonstration with, the whole family went to a demonstration, peaceful demonstration, last weekend. And we wore masks and we were with about 2,000 other people. You were there, Ben.
Yep.
I was in a much cooler spot. You were up on a hot stairs and sweating profusely.
Yes.
You know something, Ben, I just want to commend you for. When you're uncomfortable, you don't fidget.
I work really hard. I work really hard not to fidget.
You are like, I can just, like, your internal narrative is, damn you uncomfortableness, I'll show you. I will be stoic.
Stoic. Yes. Yeah. I take the stoic approach. Like, I can handle this.
Yes.
I can handle this. Yep. I'm going to take some deep breaths. Yeah. I felt very hot and very uncomfortable that whole day.
Yeah. Well, anyway. You looked it, except that you weren't fidgeting. Anyway, so my son is asking me if he can watch some documentaries about civil rights movement, about Black history. No. He specifically said Black history. And so I've been researching Black history documentaries for kids. And that's tricky, Ben.
Are there any out there?
Well,
for kids?
Here's the deal. So there was a movie that came out. I never saw Selma. Did you ever see Selma? Came out in 2014.
I never saw that, no.
Yeah.
I've heard it's great.
Right. It's about Martin Luther King.
Uh-huh.
It gets good sort of, it's, I think it was rated PG, and it gets good like reviews from Black historians and others who say that it's appropriate for kids. There's also like just some like BBC or PBS documentaries on, I'm considering letting him watching James Baldwin's I Am Not Your Negro.
Okay.
Because I don't know. I feel like the thing that I would be most concerned about for my son is watching white violence against Black people. But I'm not afraid of him hearing the pain and the anger of a Black person because of white violence. I'm not afraid of that.
Yeah.
You know,
I think that's a helpful distinction. It's helpful to realize it's watching violence does violate. Like, you have to be really careful with it. You have to be careful with it. Like I've, even for myself, I've had to realize, like, I try not to insulate myself from watching, you know, the videos that pop up online, but I've also had to just be aware of my own capacity to take in these things.
Yeah. Right.
And just say like, I don't know if I need to see another one to be convinced that this is a problem.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, do I need to watch this one? So anyway,
right.
I think that's a helpful distinction, but that's different from hearing the pain of somebody who has been violated.
Yeah.
Like, we can hear that. I don't think that's inherently violating. I think that's an act of empathy.
It builds empathy.
Yeah.
I think for my son,
right,
and the way he's developed as an 11-year-old. But anyway, this interview, I think, creates in us, she casts vision for how to have the capacity to hold space open for our kids to wonder and discover and learn. Rather than just, you know, I'm going to sit you down and this is going to be my 3-minute speech on why racism is bad. And after this, there won't be any question because now you know what we think about it.
Another version of the talk. Have you had the racism talk?
Right.
It's maybe not the right approach. Yeah.
Right. So anyway, I think it helps us get an imagination for how to be present to our kids.
Yeah. All right. Well, enjoy this interview, folks.
Yes.
It was great. How to be present with our kids in their wanderings. And if they, you know, if they're old enough to kind of see and understand what's happening in the world right now, they're going to have a lot of wanderings. And so, even when we don't know the answers, that's another thing she says, like, as a parent, you don't have to know the answer to the question to just wonder with your children. Mm-hmm. You don't lose respect by saying you don't know. You probably gain it for the most part with your kids by being honest with them and saying, let's work on that together. Or let's discover this together.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, if you're white, there's a lot that you don't know about racism and a lot you need to discover, just like we're learning. So,
yes.
All right. Here's Lacey.
Hi, Lacey. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's good to see you. And Ben just referenced, you have a candle lit behind you. It's very serene. You have books and a cross and a candle. I want to be, and there's like exposed wood over there. I want to be where you are. It looks it looks so cozy. Is that your little study office at home?
It is. It is. We actually live in a log cabin. Like for real. A log cabin.
And so
it's really tiny. So during COVID, we are in vigorous fellowship with one another.
That's quite a way to say it.
Would you say your fellowshipping is vigorous?
Yes. I have two adolescent daughters. I have a 15-year-old and a soon to be 19-year-old. So it is vigorous. There's a lot of words.
Yes, that's
Ben,
great.
Ben has teenage daughters too, and they're all at home as well.
They are. Yeah, I got a daughter home from college, and two in high school. And we just spend all day together. So.
Yep. I'm sure you've got a candle lit too.
I do. There's always several candle lit.
Well, Lacey, would you give us an introduction who you are and when you're not vigorously fellowshipping with your family during COVID, what you spend your time doing?
Sure. Well, I'm a spiritual director, so I accompany people in their life with God, and I meet with people kind of all over the world because the miracle of digital media. Yeah. And I'm also a professor, so I teach at Portland Seminary and at Fuller. And for Renovari as well. So I kind of have that dual role. And I meet with children in spiritual direction at a transitional facility for homeless families called Haven House.
Yes.
So I practice direction with children at Haven House. And that's kind of the other gift that I get to engage in.
Yes.
And you've written a book, something we want to chat about today, called Spiritual Conversations with Children, Listening to God Together. Did this book come out of your work at Haven House? How did you relate?
Yeah, it sure did. My doctoral dissertation was on a model of spiritual direction with children, because it's just not been done. No one, you know, people have thought about it, but no one sort of put the scholarship into it and thought, okay, how do we do this? Because the child's experience of God is different than the adult experience. And so we have to think about kind of our past history as well as what it would look like to meet a child where they are.
Yes. And, okay. So if my imagination for, like what kids need to have a relationship with God is like put on a VeggieTale video and then ask them questions about what they learn. Let's just say that's my imagination.
Sure. Okay? Sure.
So work with me here, Lacey.
Yeah.
Like how would you describe to somebody like me how spiritual direction with children is distinct from that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I can also say that you can use anything. The Holy Spirit is not limited by our human capabilities. Thanks be to God. And so it would, maybe it is watching a VeggieTale video and then after it saying something to the child like, can you tell me, you know, what in that video reminded you of God's presence with you? And asking an open-ended question, giving your full attention to the child. And I like to use an acronym, B-O-W, BOW. So turning your body entirely towards the child. So putting away anything that's kind of distracting you. And then O for openness. So instead of expecting answers, can you have an openness to what their experience might be? Because it may be something that you never even thought about and never experienced yourself.
And so, then,
go ahead.
So I just wanted to go ahead. Tell us the W.
Okay,
and causing a lot of thoughts. Yeah.
Yeah, and the W is wonder. Can you wonder with the child? I wonder how God will meet you as you get up from the couch and eat Doritos. I wonder, and keeping a sense of openness and wonder, realizing that our adult expectations, that the Holy Spirit is just pleased as punch to blow those out of the water.
Yeah, as you say that, Lacey, I'm struck by the fact that you are, I mean, O is open is one of the words, right? But you're, instead of kind of like having a sheet of expected answers and expecting the child to conform to the answers, and the child is good if they say one of the things on the sheet, you know what I mean? And they're, well, you know, I'm not sure what's going on if you don't actually answer these. There's this open-endedness that you invite their imagination, you invite kind of this, I don't know, just a more open-ended response. And it strikes me that feels scary to a lot of adults.
Oh, I think absolutely. What it really tests and tries is our trust in God.
Yes.
I mean, and it happens for me and my own children. I mean, constantly, if I want to pay attention to the underlying current in my relationship with my children, it's always, God, do I trust them with you?
Yeah.
Do I trust you with them? Yeah. Do I trust them with you?
Yes. Yeah. So it's hard to have the openness and the wonder you're describing if I need to manage and secure outcomes and control. Kind of even managing my own anxiety and doing that. You talk in your book about the importance of listening, and you use a phrase called, curious inquiry. Is that what you say? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We talk about compassionate curiosity at Gravity a lot. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about the same competency, which is being present and available to really listen to people. Can you maybe tell us, why is that so important? And two, why is that so hard?
I think it's hard for a multitude of reasons. I think it has to do with some of the difficulty is that we carry our own childhood experiences and our own childhood wounds with us into every conversation we have, even how our picture of God was formed when we were children. And so we can be very actively trying to manage that when we're being present with children, because that's going to be touched instantly. What we believed about God when we were a child, or what we were told to believe, or even our, because our picture of God is formed when we are young, by those who had authority in our life. And so a bit of that, and you know, when our picture of God is forming, always being shaped and formed throughout our lives, there's a little bit of residual left over, or a lot of residual, depending on how much work we've done, as we get older. And so a conversation with a child can touch on that, and then we can be, you know, moved instantly into managing. So in those moments, we can be managing our own relationship with God rather than being present to the child in their relationship with God.
Yes.
And, you know, the adult propensity is to, you know, as we sort of are on our journey, is to split the self. So we split.
Yeah, what does that mean? Yeah.
Yeah, we kind of, we distance our thoughts and feelings from our body. We might distance our theology from our feelings, instead of letting them be integrated together. And for a child, all the dimensions of the self are integrated together. If you want a really good example of that, is take a young child to a store that has candy at the checkout, and they will lay down on the floor and scream because they want that candy, because all the dimensions of their self are integrated. Now, I, as the parent, have split the self. I needed to, because I'm feeling incredible amount of shame and anger, and were my body to act on that, we might all go to jail. So it is a mark of maturation to split the self. But for a child, all those dimensions are together. And so their experience of God and the questions that we ask them, so back to these divinely curious questions, you know, these questions have to integrate all the dimensions of the self. They may not be able to articulate an experience of God when they were out on the swings and they felt the wind blow through them until they're much older, but they had it and their body knew it.
Yeah, you talk a lot about, you talk a lot about the body in this book, Lacey, you know, for many of us, we're not used to, like, we have to go to like Eastern philosophy or yoga to like take the body seriously. And it's difficult for Western Christians to mind their own tradition in a way that helps them reconnect with their body. Why is that so important to you? And in particular, why is that so important if we're going to have these spiritual conversations with our kids?
Well, I would say that we just, in Western Christianity, we just haven't minded enough. We go back to our Eastern Orthodox brothers and sisters, and they use the body. They do the sign of the cross, the three, you know, the thumb, the index, and the middle finger coming together, make the Trinity. The two fingers, you know, the ring finger and the pinky finger, representing the two natures of Jesus coming down to the palm earth. There we go. There's a bodily way to pray. And then to touch the forehead, the chest, and the two shoulders in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. So we just, in Western Christianity, we just haven't gone far enough. I mean, they bend, they bow, their bodies are involved.
I want to hear more about why it's important to connect with that. But I'm reminded of a book called From the Holy Mountain by William Dalrymple, who he's written about a half dozen books about these just travels and journeys. Like, he retraced Marco Polo's journey from Europe to China. And From the Holy Mountain, he's retracing these two monks that did a 6th century pilgrimage to all the Orthodox seminaries in the Middle East. And so he redoes this in the 1990s. It's fascinating. It's a really good read. But he goes to, and I'm going to forget the branch or sect of Christianity in the Middle East. He goes to like the oldest, like, existing people group who like trace their roots to 1st or 2nd century Christians that are still singing and worshiping in the same forms that they had since the 1st and 2nd century. And he's a Scottish Catholic or Scottish Anglican, but his blink on watching them worship is, I'm watching Muslims. They've got carpets on the ground. They're bowing. They're prostrating themselves. They come up. He's like, everything about this feels Muslim. And he was struck by the fact of how embodied these ancient Christians, how they use their body in prayer. And the only template he had for who would worship like this would be Muslims. Isn't that fascinating? And anyway, yeah. So I'm saying amen.
Can you tell me the name of that book again?
From the Holy Mountain, I believe. From the Holy Mountain. And it's Dalrymple, and it's really hard for me to say it. But I'll message you after the podcast and hammer it out.
Great. Yeah. That could be the Ethiopian.
Yes.
They're one of the oldest worshiping.
So what do we lose?
In their way.
What do we lose? I'll kneel and I'll fold my hands. But you know, Paul talks about men praying with arms raised, you know, mm-hmm. and like that if we did that, you'd be kind of like, what's going on, weirdo? But the body's so important. So tell us why, and especially with kids.
Yeah, the body is so important because the mind isn't all that we are.
Yeah.
And recently, when I did a conference, I held up my cell phone and I said, dearly beloved, if our faith is only in our heads, we are seriously outgunned. And I pointed to the phone because we have all the information we could ever want right here. If our faith is all about entertainment, and I pointed to my phone, we are seriously, we're just outdone because of this object we carry in our pockets. But an experience of God, that moves into all the dimensions of the self, including the body, we just can't get that anywhere else.
Yes. Yes.
And so the mind for a child, the powers of reasoning, and we can blame the Enlightenment, the Industrial Revolution, whatever thing we want to hang on that. The mind is not the seat of our experience of in our relationship with God. Mm-hmm. It is a formational factor. It is incredibly important. But if mm-hmm. we house everything about our relationship with God in the mind, we leave one, our differently abled brothers and sisters, out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And that's just not true to the character of God.
Hmm.
And yes. Children's rational and analytical capacities will certainly begin to come, they grow into them. But they're not the seat of their experience of God.
This podcast is brought to you by Gravity Leadership Academy, our 10-month online training intensive for Christian leaders who want to root their life and leadership in God's love and bring lasting transformation to their culture. In Gravity Leadership Academy, you'll learn the real-life practicalities of how to notice God's presence and activity in and around you so you can participate more fully in God's life and mission and open up space for those around you to do so too. We've worked really hard to make this training in missional leadership practical and doable. To find out more about Gravity Leadership Academy, visit gravityleadership.com/academy.
You have a chapter in your book entitled Whole Person Prayer. Can you, mm-hmm. There's so much goodness in this book in terms of practical, you have scripts of conversations, you've got ways to engage children, but could you just describe what is whole person prayer and how is that distinct from maybe close your eyes and pray the Lord's Prayer?
Mm. Mm. Well, a whole person prayer means that we include all the dimensions of the self. So we bring both our feelings and our thoughts into it. And bringing feelings into it, you know, for children generally, their feelings are their first line of awareness.
Hmm.
How they feel. And then to bring our bodies into our relationship with God. And that means, when I invite people to pray the examine, like if I'm going to give a family or someone, one practice I think that will totally shape is one not to be hung up, one to absolutely do, would be praying the examine with our children. Mm-hmm. And we begin it with an act of bodily awareness of God's presence. And for some families, that's a fist bump. For some families, it's, we, one of our daughters, her love language is touch. And so she would like for us to wrestle with her. And she's strong as an ox. She just kills us. Just a big group hug is our bodily awareness of prayer together. And then we will move into some different movements of the examine. And we end with, another awareness, a bodily engagement with God's presence and being present with each other.
Yeah. What strikes me as you're talking, Ben, I'd love to hear what you're thinking too. What strikes me as you're talking, Lacey, is like, well, that's not religious. Fist bumps and bear hugs. That's not Christian.
Right.
But what you're doing is you're re-sacramentalizing everyday life and body and relationships with the presence of God. It's shot through. He's waiting to meet us in these ordinary physical moments. And I just love that. And I think what your book, you say over and over again, this is no problem for children. The gap they have to leap to meet God in a fist bump is way less than, 43-year-olds who got everything figured out.
Right. For them, the mind is not an obstacle.
Isn't that, we tend to, the faith that I kind of grew up in as a Christian, the feelings were the danger, the feelings were the obstacle. And really, that's the mind being an obstacle to reintegrating my feelings, right? You just sharing that the kids don't have that barrier. It's like they can just run to Jesus and sit on his lap, while adults stand around and complain.
Yes.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I keep thinking about, Lacey, is for parents. I mean, this series that we're doing right now is a little bit just about parenting and about how to form faith in our kids and those kinds of things. And so one of the things I'm thinking about is just that parents may want some sort of step that feels doable to them. And so, praying the examine feels like, oh, maybe, gosh, I don't even know what that is. And what are you talking about? That kind of thing. But like the two things that are encouraging to me about what you're saying are, number one, like wrestling or fist bumping or giving a hug or whatever the child sort of likes and enjoys, that can be an entryway into prayer. Like, don't think it has to be hands folded. We're going to light a candle. Everybody be quiet. We're going to be on our knees. Don't think it needs to be that. It can be something that your child already is enjoying that is perhaps speaking to them. They can't reflect on this yet, but the reason they love wrestling has to do with God. It has to do with their relationship with God somehow. And we can enter into that mystery just by noticing what they like and engaging them on that level. That's the first thing that I think is encouraging for parents. It's encouraging for me as I'm thinking about this for my kids. And the second thing that feels encouraging about what you're saying is that kids are probably more ready for this than we think. That some of the obstacles that come up in my brain are like, oh, my kids think prayer is boring, or they don't really want to, they don't like this, or they don't want to do this.
Yeah.
But perhaps because they're so integrated, they're so much more integrated than we are, they don't have more ready for this than we think they are. Yeah.
If they play, they're ready for it. If they play, they're ready for it. Play absolutely is a prayer tool. It is a way to communicate with God. Children often play out. Right now in homes across the world, children are playing out their fears. They've got a play set of someone in a boat, the sharks are eating the people because they're playing out their fears.
Really.
And then you as a parent can come along and maybe it's a little bit later in the day, say, how did your play go today? What did you play with? How did that make you feel? What do you want? See, that question about just what do you want? Or I love this one. What do you wish? Wish is a word of desire. And we have to, I mean, that's Ignatian's colloquy, a word of desire. What is it that you want?
Yes.
So I wonder if you could tell God what your wishes are. And not like as the divine butler, but right now in a time of great uncertainty, anxiety, or pain, we can invite our children to tell their wishes, their wants, and their fears to God.
Lacey, that question. So I think a lot of parents and a lot of youth, people who are around kids, we want the things you're talking about, but we lack the imagination for how to do it. Like, how would I talk to a kid and create space for them to be to show up and not demand things or ask them a question about superlapsarianism that they have no idea what I'm talking about? You know, like, there's just all these anxieties we have. But I wonder if you could tell God what you wish, what you wish could happen. Like, just having that language and those words, and even if it's just like, what would Lacey say? Oh, yeah, this is what she'd say. You know, until we develop an imagination for how to do our heart's desire, it's so helpful for us.
Yeah.
Lacey, because I don't know, maybe some of us who are listening had a Lacey Borgo spiritual director as a six-year-old. Maybe some of us did. Or a Lacey Borgo as mom. But most of us did not. And so this book, Lacey, really is like you parenting us on how to be you parenting the child that still lives in us, and also you parenting us on how to be with the child outside of us. And so it's such a gift.
I wonder if I could share a little anecdote about this. This reminds me of, you know, we're recording this on Good Friday. So we're several weeks into Coronatide, as we call it. I got this video from a family in our church. It's actually my goddaughter. She's about 5 years old, and they just recorded her praying. She was just praying on the couch. And her prayer was so funny because it just drifted all over the place. It was like, "Dear God," and then what she ended up with was, like, "I wish we could cast a spell on the virus and make it good."
Yes,
and, you know, and the mother was just like, "Well, how would that work?" And she goes, "I don't know, but I want the virus to start being good." So you know, and it's like, "Oh, should we?" And she, you know, she tried to lead her into it. Should we ask God for that? No, let's cast a spell on it.
But, you know,
just creating that space for her to just name, "I wish we could cast a spell on the virus and make it good."
Oh, and what that has to teach us as adults. Yeah. One, the audacity that we that God has given us the agency to act on things that are destructive for them to be redeemed.
Yes.
Ooh, that child.
Yeah, well, I mean, she's acting towards the virus the way the Apostle Paul would. Apostle Paul doesn't meet somebody sick and like beg God to heal him. Apostle Paul meets somebody sick and says, "Be healed."
Yeah, yeah.
So she's actually praying as like a child of God.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of just take a notebook that you have laying around in your house and some washable markers if your children are young. Washable is important. And just leave them out and let it be your wish or your prayer. You could call it your wish or your prayer book, and invite anybody to visit the prayer book at any time that they want, anytime during the day. Be sure, adults, that you go because you are modeling, and write really what you do wish. Do you wish that people would stay outside in the backyard a little longer so you could have 10 minutes of quiet? Write it down. Draw a picture.
That's great. So maybe as we wrap up here, Lacey, I wonder if you could speak to, if you're aware of, obviously when you're working with a 9-year-old, it's different than you working with your 19-year-old, right? So obviously there's developmental differences and stage of life and cognitive capacities, et cetera. But I wonder if you could speak a bit to how has your work with doing spiritual direction with kids, how has it changed your relationship with God? How are you different with the Lord because of you helping kids encounter God?
Well, gosh, the numbers of ways could be vast. But I would say maybe the two that are most prominent, One is that my own childhood wounds have been healed, are being healed. So my own wounds that I live with every day, that we all live with, just even in, Ben, when you shared the story, I could hear my own wound being spoken to from the wisdom of that child. So there is no way that when we are present to another, and this is Douglas Quaker Douglas Steer quote, that we are not fully present to another child, adult, middle schooler, that we do not go away changed. So when you are fully present with a child, no matter their age, you will go away changed. Something in you will have shifted. And if you've been fully present, there'll be a kind of a taste of freedom in what you taste. So there's that. And the other piece is that I've realized, and I've been working with children for about 30 years. I was a public school teacher first, in Rochester, New York, in inner city Rochester, New York. These children have reminded me every single day, and my own children, that I do not have the corner of the market on God's ways of reaching out and engaging with human beings. It cannot be exhausted. And I don't know. I don't even know the half of it.
Yeah. And that's the openness and the wonder, right?
I don't know half of it.
You're just discovering it as every time.
Every time.
Oh, Lacey, that's beautiful.
That is.
A good friend of ours, David Fitch, wrote a book called Faithful Presence. And in that book, he describes seven practices for the church to be present to God. And one of them is being with children. And he calls it the sacrament of being with children. And I think that's what you're testifying to. And that's what your book gives us. I mean, it's so practical, Lacey. It gives us handles and an architecture to actually do it, not just aspire and intend, but to actually do it. So thank you for writing this. Thank you for sharing it with us. I feel like you were parenting me on how to be a better parent as I read this. Thank you for making it an accessible, easy read as well. So, you know, there's no footnotes. A chapter takes about 10 minutes to read. I just really appreciated that. If people are listening and they are intrigued and they want to know more about what you do, and how would they connect with you other than just through your book?
You can go to my website, gooddirtministries.org. And I know. I
love that name. How did that come? Where did you get the good dirt? Where's that come from?
It comes from a devotional series that I co-wrote about, you know, tending our soul soils with our families, so within the family. Okay. Right now, there's a video series on the website about how it's prepping my 15-year-old for social media. And we decided to video some conversations around how we're preparing for this. So that Lacey. Might be a bit interesting.
That is great.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, we'll see how it turns out. It's a drama.
Yeah, I'm having conversations with my 8-year-old girl about why she can't have a TikTok account, and she doesn't quite understand it.
Yeah.
And all the reasons I can think to tell her, I'd have to explain the reasons. Yeah, right. I'm not ready to do that.
Just trust your dad.
Oh, Lacey, thanks so much for being with us and for this. This precious gift of a book.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for the conversation.
Yeah. Lovely to be with you. Peace.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Our show is produced by Ben Sternke, Matt Tebby, and Ben Hardman. Aaron Sternke does our mixing and mastering. You can check out his work at aaronsternke.com. If you find our podcast helpful, share it with your friends in person and on social media. And don't forget to rate and review us online, as well as subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can join our Gravity community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join. And hey, we'd love to hear from you. Ask a question, make a comment, send us an idea, a recommendation, recipe, whatever. You can email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. Catch you next time.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.